This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
I'm still amazed, 2 days later, that the Pittsburgh Steelers have pulled this off. That they have Justin Fields and Russell Wilson. Meanwhile, last year, they had three quarterbacks that are not on their team this year, and Kenny Pickett, Mitchell Trubisky, and Mason Rudolph. Just a remarkable job by the Pittsburgh Steelers. We'll get to that in a second. Tune into NBA action tonight as the Warriors host the Knicks, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins 9:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. All right, there's so much going on. We got the NCAA tournament, men's and women's. Rebecca Lobo is going to join us in 15 minutes to talk about the women's tournament. Caitlin Clark, the pressure on her, LSU, South Carolina undefeated. We have news today around Dak Prescott. So Dak Prescott, per Field Yates, with the Dallas Cowboys, of course, has lowered his cap hit $4 million. They work out a deal with the Cowboys where it's a signing bonus, and basically there's nothing in terms of a new contract long term, but that number goes rounding up from 60 to 55. It adds void years. CeCe, this tells you what about what the Cowboys are doing?
Well, it tells me that they're going to be aggressive, right? They're pushing more money, or presenting the opportunity to push more money, more salary into future years, future caps, in order to put more talent on this team in 2024 and make a push for a title. So I like the move, them getting aggressive. I thought that they could have made this move a month ago in terms of converting some base salary so they could be ready for the start of the new league year, ergo the start of free agency. But they did it going into week two of free agency. There's still plenty of talent that's out there. There are also some trades that are out there to be had over the next month to month and a half leading up to the NFL draft. So I think this is the Dallas Cowboys positioning themselves to add talent to this team that can make a difference in terms of impacting their championship aspirations.
The other thing is they are working together on some level in order for this to happen, right? Conversations are being had between the two parties. I don't know if that's going to result in a contract extension, we're going to see the big deal get done, but at least they are working together to make things happen, at least for this year, right?
I got to tell you, if they're not working together, like you said, and like it's been indicated, and they don't have a contract extension, I think this is a terrible move for the Cowboys. Terrible. Because per Spotrac, however you say it, I always say it wrong, that his dead cap drops to 55.4, or his cap hit drops to 55.4 this year, but his dead cap on his 2025 void increases to 40.5. So basically what you're doing, you're saying, if we don't work out a long-term deal, we're actually increasing the amount of money Dak Prescott is going to count against our cap without him there. And as we have pointed out many a times, they can't franchise him. He becomes a true NBA-style or Kirk Cousins-style unrestricted free agent. So you better work this out, because you have actually hurt your future if you don't work this out with Dak Prescott.
Yeah, but you can't hedge if you're trying to win a championship with a good to really good quarterback. And I think that's where Dak Prescott is. I don't think he's elite. He's not Joe Burrow. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He ain't Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson. Unless you have one of those four guys, then you're going to have to mortgage some of your future assets, some of your future cap space, in order to take advantage of your title window. And for the Dallas Cowboys, that's right now. Now, the window is closing. We saw that they lost left tackle Tyron Smith. He signed with the New York Jets in free agency. Like, as this thing continues to go on, you're going to lose more pieces. So if you're Dallas, you've got to go all in 2024. And a big part of this is being able to work hand in glove with Dak Prescott and lowering his cap hit so you can add more talent on this team. Again, I think this decision is a prelude to a bigger move for the Dallas Cowboys. I think they're going to add some veteran talent on this team that might not be in the free agency marketplace. I think they have the potential to make a trade for a veteran player and take on some salary, but adding a player, adding a piece that they're going to need in order to contend with the elite teams in the NFC, like the San Francisco 49ers, like the Detroit Lions, and like the Green Bay Packers. I think that's what Dallas is preparing to do. And this small move with Dak Prescott is just an indicator that there are bigger moves that are on the horizon.
Well, they need to, because can we sit here right now and say the Dallas Cowboys are better than they were the last time we saw them play and get embarrassed at home in the playoffs by the Green Bay Packers?
No, you could say it the other way.
Exactly. They've had
incomplete.
they're not only incomplete, you've had talent attrition and you haven't made any market big improvements. For a team that says they're all in, who has a head coach who we don't know what his future is and a quarterback whose future we don't know what it is, I expected them to act with more of a sense of urgency than they have thus far.
All right, we've had a good run here of making predictions. We talk about Sam Howell and his trade value. He got traded. We talk about Eric Kendricks the moment he committed to the Niners, saying he should be a Cowboy instead, and he goes to the Cowboys, right? We've had a good run. You said, CC, that they could make a trade. I'm not going to ask you the player. That's too hard. Give me the position that they're looking at. Give me the position. If you're the Dallas Cowboys, you free up $4 million of cap space, and you're thinking, okay, whose door can we knock on? What position needs the most help with the Dallas Cowboys?
I still
think
they have to get a defensive tackle.
Okay, so they're going to call someone for a defensive tackle today.
They've got to call somebody for a defensive tackle. They've got to get that position figured out. Right, and I thought Christian Wilkins would be an outstanding addition. Chris Jones didn't make it to free agency. The Kansas City Chiefs locked him up. But that was something that Micah Parsons talked about a little bit on his podcast. He says, we need one of those monsters at defensive tackle, right, mm-hmm. to alleviate some of the pressure. It's hard to pass rush when it's second and four and third and two, right? You have to earn the right to pass rush. And their defense was suspect, putting it kindly, when it came to stopping the run last year. They drafted Mazi Smith, defensive tackle from Michigan, a year ago. To this point, it hasn't had the impact that they were probably looking for. So I think they need a presence at the interior of that defense, somebody that can eat up a lot of blocks, somebody that can apply pressure and collapse the middle of the pocket. I think they have to add that piece in order to take this team to the next level.
Yeah, I don't have a name for you then off of the defensive tackle. I think we'd probably have to find a team that would be either on the way down and want to rid themselves of South. Like, look at Denver. Maybe they have anybody that would be interesting. Carolina. Mm-hmm. Like, those are the teams that maybe in my head I'm looking at. But obviously, if you free up $4 million in cap space, if you're the Dallas Cowboys, you have Dak Prescott and you add a piece this year that can help you win, that answers your question. Are they better? Well, they start to get better. But if they don't have Dak Prescott long-term, but they have a salary cap charge for Dak Prescott long-term, that's obviously not ideal. Conversely, the money they're spending at the quarterback position, around $55 million against their cap, is $50 million more or so than what the Pittsburgh Steelers are spending. They go out there and they bring in Justin Fields. They have Russell Wilson. Let's start on the Bears side of things with this, guys, because RG3, Robert Griffin III, our teammate here at ESPN, put out an interesting tweet with some video and audio about what he thinks the Bears should now do, or what he thinks the number one pick in the draft should now do as a result of this move.
Caleb Williams should pull a Eli Manning and demand that the Chicago Bears do not draft him number one overall. After everything that's happened with just Justin Fields, can Caleb Williams really look at that and say, you know what? This is the organization that has my best interest at heart, and they're going to help develop me into the player that I want to become. Caleb Williams is on record saying that he wants to be legendary. He wants to rewrite history, and he wants to be the best that he can possibly be and win the most games he can possibly win. After the Bears took Justin Fields, the 11th pick in the draft, and turned him into a sixth round pick in the 2025 draft by trading him to the Pittsburgh Steelers? Can Caleb Williams really look at that and say, you know what? Yeah, this organization is going to help get me where I want to go. I don't think it's saying that.
So understand where he's coming from with the history around the Bears. Understand what he's coming from about Justin Fields. I will defer back to something that CC always says, is you cannot just alleviate the player from blame entirely. You cannot just say the player has no impact in all of this. Three seasons, 40 touchdowns, 30 interceptions as a quarterback for Justin Fields. Caleb Williams is walking into a significantly better situation, though, than Justin Fields is.
Sure.
It's not close what Caleb Williams is going to walk into. I do not agree that Caleb Williams should ask for a trade at all in any way, shape, or form.
Well, also, when you look at the teams that are in the top three, Washington, I know new ownership group, obviously, but it's not like they're a proven commodity at the quarterback position. Like, they've been developing quarterbacks over the past couple of years. The Patriots, they have a completely new regime. We don't know what Gerard Mayo is going to be as a head coach, and they haven't had success recently post-Brady and drafting and developing a quarterback. So even though RG3 is correct in his assessment of the Chicago Bears and what they've been at drafting and developing quarterbacks, if Caleb Williams were to do this, it's not as if he's going to force his way into an obvious place that's going to be a turnkey solution for him. It's going to be a risk wherever he goes, because he's definitely going to be probably taken by one of those top three teams.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I mean, again, I think it's the organization, it's the laundry not getting the benefit of the doubt, but when you look at the actual pieces that they put in place, I mean, it was the best defense after week 10 in the NFL. It was the best defense in the NFL after week 10. That's how good they were. All right? They were that good. I mean, Montez Sweat pressure player. They were able to create turnovers. They were able to keep teams down in terms of overall scoring. And I always say this, a quarterback's best friend is a defense that can create short fields and extra possessions. Well, Chicago Bears defense could do that pretty good. All right, so they got that part checked. You've got two wide receivers that are legitimate threats in Keenan Allen, who's coming off one of his best seasons as a pro, and DJ Moore, who was an absolute game breaker. Cole Kmet is a solid tight end. You got two bookend tackles in Braxton Jones and Darnell Wright. I mean, you upgraded the running game with adding DeAndre Swift in free agency. I'm not sure exactly what else needs to be done in order to help a young quarterback have success. Now, we'll see what ends up happening with their overall offense. They're transitioning. They got a new offensive coordinator. We'll see how that goes. But I think it's all teed up for Caleb Williams to step in and have success. Now, I don't know that he's going to be your week one starter. You have to assess where the team is at. But I think if he's not the week one starter, it says more about the state of the team than it does his overall ability. But I completely disagree with what RG3 is saying. I think the Chicago Bears are ready to help support a young franchise quarterback.
I think they should go out there and sign Ryan Tannehill, by the way, on a side note. Like, they need a better backup quarterback than what they have now that Justin Fields is gone. But Smalls, I want to go back to something you said because I think you're so dead on. It's the laundry. Take a team that we would deem to be neutral in our opinions of them in the NFL, right? There's, which is few, because we're always either, oh, we got to trust them or not trust them. So meaning we're not going to take the Steelers, who we trust, or the Chiefs, who we trust, or the Jets, who we don't trust.
How, like Minnesota?
Minnesota and Tennessee. Let's just use both of those teams. Kind of neutral in our trust level. If I told you that Caleb Williams was going to go to one of those teams with the weapons that CC just outlined, would anybody be suggesting that he demands out?
No.
No chance. It's just the historical laundry of the franchise that we're looking at. And when we say, like, what they did to Justin Fields, per all reports, they traded Justin Fields to where he wanted to go to for a worse offer. What did they do wrong to Justin Fields? They gave him 3 years as an opportunity to start, and in 2024, the way we operate in the league is you have to do it now. It may not be the right way, but that's the way the league operates.
Well, they let him get the career knocked out of him. I mean, I don't know that there's a quarterback that's been more contacted over the last 2 years than Fields, and then you fired his head coach after his rookie year. Like, that's what you did to him.
But he deserves some of the blame, though, to be fair.
Yeah, but, I mean, how much success are you going to have as a quarterback if they're firing your head coach after your rookie year? And then, oh, by the way, going into this season, you had two coaches on that staff be fired for HR reasons.
Right.
So, I mean, it's been perfect. It's been a swirl of dysfunction around that franchise. So, by no means did the Bears cover themselves in glory in terms of earning the benefit of the doubt when it comes to developing quarterbacks. But I would say this feels different.
I agree.
Now that they're doing this, right? Because they could have held out hope that somebody could get desperate based on an injury that happens this offseason or an injury that happens in training camp and then try to trade Justin Fields for more than what they got for him. But the fact that they did it with this timeline, doing right by Fields, but then also eliminating the possibility of any controversy with Fields and whoever they take at number one in the building at the same time, I think that shows you that the Bears are trying to do things differently.
I totally agree, and I think a lot of it is about job preservation, right? Like, if you think back when you suggested that they trade him after that Thursday night game against the Commanders, they probably looked at it and said, well, if we stink the rest of the way, we may not be here to get the benefit. And then the reverse, as you've pointed out, CeCe, if you have him there with Caleb Williams and you let it drag on into the season and you then lose some of the respect with Caleb Williams because he's uncomfortable in that situation, then what's going to happen? Job preservation is going to be an issue, right? I mean, you're putting yourself in danger versus just saying, let's start anew.
But I will say this, the Bears have boxed themselves in. There's no chance that they could take anybody else at number one. It has to be Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they traded Justin Fields now and they've cleared the decks for a quarterback, could you imagine if they took somebody other than Caleb Williams and it didn't work out?
No. And it didn't work out? No.
They would get crucified. They absolutely have to take Caleb Williams out. He might as well get a 312 cell phone number. He can start looking for real estate in the South Loop. Like, yeah. He is going to be a Chicago Bear.
We're on Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio. Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and The Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
The women's bracket. Huge this year. So many fun storylines. And of course, you could be a part of it as part of the ESPN Tournament Challenge. Go sign up and play. Download the Tournament Challenge app. Fill out your men's and women's brackets. Don't forget to join the ESPN Radio men's and women's groups in the game and compete with us. All right, ESPN college basketball analyst Rebecca Lobo joins us now here on Unsportsmanlike. Along with Michelle Smallman, Chris Canty, Evan Cohen with you. Rebecca, we have said that there may not be more pressure on any team, men's or women's side, to make it to the Final Four and win it all than Iowa on the women's side this year. Do you agree with that statement?
Yes. And not even on the team, but on Caitlin Clark. I mean, just think about the pressure that's been on this young woman all season long to perform as she's approached record after record and all the attention is on her team. And I give her credit. I give her team credit because they pretty much every single opportunity they have, they meet that moment. And even in the Big Ten championship game, when they're down at the end of regulation, they found a way to get that thing into overtime and then to win the game. But I mean, there's been no more scrutiny, I don't think, on an athlete the last couple of months and eyeballs than we've seen on Caitlin Clark. That's for sure.
Rebecca, the number one seed, South Carolina, Texas, Iowa, and USC. Who's the most vulnerable of that group?
And the most vulnerable, I would say, and I think only because of the bracket they're in, could be Iowa. I think Iowa has the toughest bracket. Not only, you know, granted, they would only have to play either UCLA, their two seed, or LSU, their three seed. But both of those teams, both UCLA and LSU, are very capable of getting to a Final Four. Both of those teams have the pieces and the components to win a national championship. And not only that, but Iowa potentially in the second round could face, in the third round or in the regionals could face a Kansas State team who they've already beat, who they've already played twice. They lost to them once, beat them once, or they could face Colorado, the five seed, who is a team that Iowa faced in the Sweet 16 a year ago and has everybody back. So their gauntlet and their potential games to get to the Final Four to me is the most challenging.
Rebecca, South Carolina undefeated up until this point, absolutely perfect. From the outside, it seems like they have no weaknesses, no vulnerabilities. Is there anything that you're concerned about with this team heading into the tournament?
The thing with South Carolina to me is they're the one team that comes into this tournament and you look at them and you say, if they play to the best of their ability, they can beat everybody else in the field. They've got 3-point shooting. They've got depth. They go nine deep. They've got size. They can score in the paint. They're outstanding in transition. They're efficient offensively. They've got the 3-point shooting this year that they didn't have a season ago. But if they don't play to the best of their ability, if they have moments like they did against Tennessee and the SEC semifinal where they're up 23 and then all of a sudden with a second to go, they're down and have to hit the shot from Camila Cardoso, the three that banks in at the end of the game to win the game, they could be beat if they don't play to the best of their ability. That being said, if they do, they've got all the pieces to win the whole thing. And I think, you know, without question, that's why they're everybody's favorites.
We're talking with Rebecca Lobo, ESPN women's basketball analyst here on Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. All right, which player is more intriguing to you in the NCAA tournament, LSU's Angel Reese or USC's Juju Watkins?
Oh, I like that question. I mean, they're both incredibly intriguing for different reasons. Angel Reese has been there before. She won the national championship a year ago. She, you know, it plays with such such sort of a flamboyant out, you know, just out in your face kind of player. And then Juju Watkins is this incredibly talented freshman who has never played an NCAA tournament game before, had an incredible season for USC, and in the Pac-12 championship game, which I was fortunate to call, Stanford, you know, put their game plan was to stop Juju and limit Juju, and they were able to do that, held her to single digits for the first time this season, and yet USC still won. But she is they're very different types of players, not only in their game and how they score and rebound and that sort of thing, but, you know, Angel is unapologetic and just full of fervor and vinegar and all of those things, and Juju kind of just plays, you know, she's doesn't show all of that outward emotion, but both certainly worth tuning in and watching because of their different skill sets and their different personalities.
Rebecca, we love the Cinderella stories this time of year. Give me the double digit seed that you could see making it to the second week of the tournament, getting to the Sweet 16.
Oh, see, the hard thing on the women's side, double-digit seeds don't typically have a chance to do that. Like, you, and this isn't fair, but you have a mid-major, Gonzaga. They're a 4 seed. They have a chance to move on. That's a really talented team. When I look at, and I'm looking at my bracket right now, double-digit seeds making it to the second weekend, there's not one where I'm looking, I'm like, oh, that's an obvious one. Yeah, especially with how the bracketing is in women's college basketball. I'd be surprised to see a double-digit seed in the second weekend.
Rebecca, there's been such incredible star power coming out of the women's game. We talk about Caitlin Clark all the time, Juju Watkins. We mentioned Angel Reese. There's a lot of big names in college basketball on the women's side right now. Is there anyone in this tournament that maybe the public isn't talking about that you think could make a name for themselves and go on a run?
Well, somebody that we're talking a lot about within women's basketball, but may not be people on the, you know, periphery may not be hearing as much about it, is another freshman, another incredible freshman down in Texas, and that's Madison Booker. And she was the Big 12 co-player of the year, the first freshman to ever be named the Big 12 player of the year. And what's kind of interesting about Madison is she was starting all season, but early in the year, their point guard, Rory Harmon, who is an outstanding player for Texas, went down with an injury. And so Madison Booker, since the injury, has been playing the point guard position. It's not her natural position. And still, in that period of time, is averaging over 20 points a game. She's doing well and has gotten better over the course of that period in terms of taking care of the basketball, high assists. She's lowering her turnovers. She's already got kind of a WNBA type of game in that she can get to her spots and elevate over defenders and can score. So within women's basketball, we've been talking about her a lot, but I don't know that people are outside of the game. You know, everybody knows Juju Watkins and maybe Hannah Hidalgo and Mylesia Fulwiley, another great freshman at South Carolina. But keep your eyes on Madison Booker. Texas is a 1 seed in the Portland 4 region, and that young woman can just flat out play. And she is really a delightful player to watch.
Rebecca, I hate to do this to you because it's your school, and you were unbelievable when you played there at UConn. But how did the rest of college basketball catch up to UConn?
I was actually having this conversation yesterday with somebody, and like how incredible it was that UConn elevated the entire sport for a long time, and we're now finally at a place where others have caught up. And I'll say this, you know, UConn, if they hadn't had all the injuries that they've had over the past couple of years, would this year be one of the absolute top 3 teams in women's college basketball. You know, they have 5 players who could have played starters minutes this year on the bench because of injuries. But at the same time, I think UConn has a 3 seed in the Portland 3 region. USC is their 1 seed. Ohio State is the 2 seed. I would not be shocked to see UConn come out of the Portland 3 region and be in yet another Final Four. They could potentially meet up with Ohio State in the Sweet 16, which would be a really interesting matchup because UConn played Ohio State last year in the Sweet 16, and Ohio State crushed them. UConn turned the ball over against the press over and over and over again. They had over 20 turnovers in that game. What UConn didn't have in that game was Paige Beckers, and what they didn't have in that game was the guard play that they have this year and players who can handle that kind of defensive intensity. But it's a great thing for women's basketball that the entire game has been elevated. And I'll tell you this, especially if players are healthy next year, Paige Beckers has already said she's returning for another year next year. UConn could be like right up there with South Carolina next year in terms of having the ability to go undefeated in the regular season.
She's a Hall of Famer, and our ESPN women's basketball analyst, Rebecca Lobo, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
I just love that you're talking women's hoops. Thanks for having me on.
Well, yes. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's huge right now. It's as big as the men's game
No doubt about it.
And arguably, I would say, bigger stars. Not arguably, definitively.
Yeah.
Bigger individual stars.
We know more of the players on the women's bracket than we do on the men's side.
No question. Yeah. No question. All right, coming up. Today is the beginning of something. When we tell you what today is the beginning of, you won't actually believe us. We'll get to that next. It's Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Fill out the brackets with ESPN. It's free and easy. Download the ESPN Tournament Challenge app. You can fill out up to 25 men's and women's brackets. More chances to win. Create groups. Compete against others. Join the ESPN Radio men's and women's groups to play against us. The app also makes it easy to share your champion and Final Four picks across social channels. App provides great info to what you want, team by team, information, history, etc. Go and download the ESPN Tournament Challenge app today. Is there a person that you are thinking that you are going to pick, theoretically, for who wins the ESPN Radio Challenge? Because I know who I think in my head of the host that I think will end up winning this thing. I'm going Myron Metcalf.
Really?
Myron knows more about college basketball than anybody on ESPN Radio, no?
No, he does. He knows a ton about college basketball.
I'm going Myron. Myron's going to win this thing. I actually think we actually have to look at the two people with the most pressure on them right now.
Fortbaugh's got to be up there.
Well, Caitlin Clark on the women's side and Myron Metcalf. Because Myron is on ESPN Radio and he covers college basketball. Fortenbaugh's an interesting one, too.
Fortenbaugh has to be on the list,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's never the people you expect to win the brackets that win the brackets.
That's fair, yeah.
It's always someone that picks based on the mascot or their gut feelings or whatever.
The colors of the teams.
Yeah, it's never that somebody kind of that spends all the time analyzing the tape and digging into these teams because the unexpected happens.
Which is why you have to put together a yellow bracket, too. That's why you got to have that third bracket.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that.
One with
year.
Vibes, you know, one when you're breaking down the matchups, and then the yellow bracket. Just, you know, hey, these are the upsets I would like to see.
So I always do, if my team is in there, one with Illinois winning, because if Illinois for some reason ever does win a national championship and I didn't have a bracket predicting them to win, I could never forgive myself. I do one with my head, who I really think will win. And maybe this is the year that I throw in that third one. Yeah. Just the chaos that I would like to see.
No doubt. No doubt about it. Although I couldn't envision in good conscience making a bracket where Virginia wins it this year.
Like, but I mean, what if they won and you didn't pick them?
Yeah,
they are dancing.
I just don't think there's a chance in hell that they're going to actually win this year. And I love my school. Don't get me wrong. I love my school. They ain't got a shot this year.
It would be the most remarkable story.
They ain't got a
story.
Shot this year. Between my school and between Evan's school, I don't think either one of them has a
what
shot.
What about my school?
The school has a shot.
Thank you.
You got a chance.
Well, we know a lot of schools are not participating in the NIT. And I said before the break, I said that there was something that started today that you're not going to believe. First, I want to play you this from Tom Crean, former coach at Indiana and Georgia and Marquette, ESPN college basketball analyst, about teams skipping the NIT, the other tournament, if you don't make the NCAA tournament, skipping the NIT, because there's a reason why they're doing this.
There's no question about it. I would want to coach. I would want to develop my team. You've got bigger staffs than you've ever had. There's plenty of time for the portal. There's plenty of time to talk to recruits. There's plenty of time to negotiate NIL deals. There's not plenty of time to play. There's not plenty of time to get your players on the floor and give them a chance to get better. There's not plenty of time for guys to continue to play that may never get to play again. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is absolutely ridiculous. It's each coach's choice. I get it. But if you take away a chance to play the games, to put your team on the floor, let them opt out. All right, the bowl season has it all the time. Let it happen. Who cares? Give your players and coaches a chance to keep coaching and playing, wow, and don't shortchange. If a guy doesn't want to play, go sit down. If a coach doesn't want to coach, go recruit. But there's got to be enough people to put five, six, seven people on the floor and go play. Makes absolutely zero sense to me.
Okay, well, here's the reason why. What starts today that you're not even going to believe starts today is the transfer portal in college basketball opens today.
I hate that.
That is like basically NFL free agency starting not this past week, but on the first day of the playoffs. What are we doing here? How can you not wait until, fine, wait out, wait, when's the national championship? April 8th, I want to say?
The 8th.
Okay, if you want to open it on the 9th, that's still a little kind of annoying because the teams that were just in the Final Four, but so be it. How do you open this today? Because what happens is, if you didn't make the tournament, the reality is you probably don't like your players that much, and they probably don't like you if you're a good team, and you probably, maybe in Coach Pitino's case at St. John's, have called them out a couple of times, and you want to start free agency, in essence, which is the portal, and playing in the NIT, I hate to say it this way, waste time for those schools that are trying to be good. Some of these coaches are probably going to show up to NCAA tournament sites just to be around some of these players that are playing. It is ridiculous that the NCAA put these coaches and players in a position where they have to choose either continuing their season or hitting free agency. It's absurd.
I also think it's bad for business, because if you had a designated time period for this after the tournament, we would pay attention to it more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wouldn't be a conflict of interest for us as a consumption, from a consumption perspective either. But I agree. I think that it puts these coaches at a disadvantage because of the veracity of this thing. I mean, you talk to any coach in college athletics now, and everyone is going after these players, and it's a 24/7 job. And for you to think about doing that, recruiting the players that you do have and other players that you would like to bring to your team while also trying to prepare to play in the NIT, is probably an overwhelming proposition.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, it's a lot of moving parts, but this is a problem of the NCAA's own making, right? When they didn't allow players to monetize their athletic ability, where they restricted player movement, where you couldn't just leave and transfer. You had to give up years of eligibility. Now that we've kind of unlocked this NIL, this is a part of the fallout from that. By not having more structure in place, you have to deal with the mechanics, the logistics of the transfer portal while the postseason is actually happening. So the thing we can't lose sight of is that the actual calendar matters in terms of the semesters and when these kids are going to school. So I think that has to factor into the math a little bit as well. But this is one of those situations. This is the way of the world when it comes to college basketball. Now, being overactive in the transfer portal, I don't know if it ends up leading to success once we get to the NCAA tournament, because we see routinely the teams that are positioned in the tournament are teams that have played together for multiple years.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that, you know, there are a lot of coaches that are around there and saying, this is what we have to adjust to now. This is life based on the NIL now, that we're going to have to forego opportunities in the postseason in order to get the kind of talent we need.
People could sit there and say, well, what's the difference between this and college football? There's a huge difference, because the college football one starts right after the season. It's one bowl game a month after you're done with your season. If you said, hey, you got one postseason game, St. John's, 1 month from now against whomever, I'm just using St. John's as an example, okay, that's a different story. They have time to maneuver the transfer portal. To commit to the NIT, you're playing multiple games in the next couple of weeks. There's no time.
Well, I guess it's kind of the same thing, though, because if you're thinking about it. Well, here's the thing. If you're thinking about it, the bowl games in college football, unless you're playing in the college football playoff, it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. So guys are hitting the portal like, okay, it doesn't really matter. We're not competing for a chip.
It's devalued.
It's the same. It's the same thing. If you don't make it to the NCAA tournament, you're not competing for a chip. I mean, I guess NIT is a chip, but it's not the one that everybody really wants. It's not the one where you're like, okay, this is, you know, your one shining moment, pun intended. Like, yeah. I guess that's probably where people are saying it's an even plane in terms of comparing it to. I get it. It actually makes sense to me. Like, if you're a coach and you're thinking about overhauling your team versus going into the NIT, I would probably choose the former and not the latter, just because the goal is to get to the NCAA tournament and win the national title.
And the problem is that you have to make a choice. Because you look at what you just did. You just said, if I'm a coach and I have a choice that I have to make literally last night between playing in a postseason or starting free agency, that is the dumbest choice that any coach has ever been presented. We don't have that in any other sport. Look at the NFL and NBA just as an example. The season ends, and then free agency begins.
Yeah.
The season, you don't have free agency during the season.
But I guess the whole point of it, though, Ev, is that they created this problem by not addressing what they're doing in the way of compensation for these athletes. You created this. Like, coaches could move about freely. They weren't restricted. They could leave one school and go to a school that would give them a bigger contract, more money, more endorsements, all of those things. Players couldn't do that. And now, because Congress has unlocked that ability for players to monetize their ability at the collegiate ranks, you're going to get more player movement. And so when you think about the actual academic calendar or all of those different things, you know, the NCAA is at the mercy of what the players ultimately want to do to put themselves in a better situation.
Also, one other thing in terms of the differences between college football and college basketball, less players in college basketball. So if college football, you have 10 to 12 student athletes that leave your program after the regular season ends before the bowl game, you still have how many on your roster in college? 60, 70, something like that? If you have 4 or 5 that leave, it's like 8 players. That's all you have left.
Yeah.
Y'all make sure y'all drink a Gatorade. I mean, IV before the game.
I mean,
ain't gonna be a whole lot of substitutions, dog.
It's
all you.
It's all you. It's all you. You wanted some player time, you got it.
You're right, though. If you actually look at the arc of this, when you don't do right 100 years ago and you're trying to play catch up, you're gonna do a lot of wrong along the way. And that's what's happening right now. You're doing, because
I don't know how you fix it, though.
Well, not starting it today. I can tell you that much. Wait a month. Wait a month.
How are you going to put the genie back in the lamp now?
No, it's too late.
Players don't want to wait a month. Players want to get to where they want to go.
And it ain't NIT teams, I promise you that. No. Coming up, Canty's best bet in the unsportsmanlike moment of the night.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
All right, time to win some money.
Canty's best bet.
I'm talking dollar bill, y'all. Chasing that bag, y'all.
Of the night.
So we've been getting to the bag with the best bet of the night. I mean, 4 of the last 5. we're on a roll here.
Cha-ching.
Not to get too cocky, but the association has been good to us. I mean, Javante's Detroit Pistons were good to the Miami Heat all weekend long. I mean, not only did they take care of business with our two-leg parlay on Friday, but, I mean, the Heat took care of business again against the Pistons on Sunday, too.
Barely.
I mean, barely, but they won.
They did it, thank God.
Did Cade Cunningham call the code red when he missed that three-pointer?
I don't know what
that
he
led
was doing.
To a runout?
It was a tie game, and Cade Cunningham it was a tie game.
Tie game.
I'm losing my mind. Yeah. And for some reason, he took a shot with way too much time left.
It was
left
like
12
seconds left on the clock.
And then they played good defense, and the ball got kicked out to Bam Adebayo. He was not a three-point shooter, and he drained a three to walk off and win.
Yeah. I feel like Cade Cunningham called the code red, though. We're close to winning this game. Let me make sure we don't. But either way, we're going to go back to the association tonight. We got the ESPN radio game of the night. Our very own Nuno's Knicks are taking on the Golden State Warriors in the Bay Area. We got a little two-leg parlay. We're buying points on the spread and team point total. We're going to go with the Knicks plus 8.5 points, and we're going to go with the over on 207.5 total points scored. So the Knicks plus 8.5 points parlayed with the over on team point total, 207.5, and that pays out at plus 134.
He survived a terrible, terrible moment in our history.
The most unsportsmanlike moment of the day.
That was terrible.
Was not a great look.
You know what? Let's start with those Knicks from over the weekend. Unsportsmanlike moments, quirky, weird, different moments. So the Knicks are playing the Kings, and their all-star point guard, Jalen Brunson, was guarded by Keon Ellis. He's a rookie out of Alabama for the Kings. And Keon Ellis, I don't understand how this happened. Basically, it's one of those things. Think about if you're playing one-on-one with somebody and you fake a pass and they go for it and you're playing one-on-one.
Yeah.
There's no reason to do that.
It doesn't make sense.
Right, doesn't make sense. So Jalen Brunson basically pointed to the sideline and Keon Ellis just stood there like as if he was a statue and he fell for the face. He started looking. What are you looking at? And Jalen Brunson just drove right by him as we're showing on ESPN.
He was looking for the pick from Isaiah Hartenstein, thinking that they were going to go high pick and roll. That's exactly what he was looking for.
Yeah.
But you got to keep eyes on your man. Like, you glance over there, dog. You don't stare. You don't stare at the guy that you think is coming to pick you and lose sight of the guy that's dribbling the basketball. That don't make no damn sense.
He's like,
Yeah, but it didn't matter what the Kings did. They had no answers for Jalen Brunson. What did he drop, 45 on their head? I mean, Mike Brown talked about it post-game. He said, we blitzed Jalen Brunson as much as we blitzed anybody, and we still didn't have any answers for him because he just kept doing his thing. Like, he was saying he was a good, good player. Matter of fact, I think he said great player.
He's very good.
Yeah, he's very, very good player.
All right, next one. Warriors and Lakers, the ABC game on Saturday night. The end of the game took about an hour. I don't know. They had a broken clock or something happened in this game. And 16 minutes to play 15 seconds. And the ABC camera crew just started getting all the celebrities who looked so bored. Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck didn't know what to do with themselves. Novak Djokovic was there as well, the tennis player. And they're all just sitting there because they're like, all right, well, can we leave? What do we do in this spot? 16 minutes to play 15 seconds. Kim Kardashian as well in the mix. Very odd end of that game on Saturday night.
Yeah.
Bad Bunny, not pleased.
Yeah.
Ended in a Lakers loss, so yeah, not great.
But it was just embarrassing that, like, you don't have a way of fixing. Like, we have no backups on things, no backup clock situation. It was just a mess over the weekend. All right, next one. One week ago today, Long Beach State made the decision to fire their head basketball coach, Dan Monson, who had been there for 17 years, which made me feel really old because I remember Dan Monson with Minnesota and Gonzaga. I mean, he was one of the guys that really started the Zags years ago, but he's been at Long Beach State for 17 years. And they made the decision, which is always an interesting one, finish out the week, right? Well, the problem is he won his conference tournament. And now he's taking his team to the NCAA tournament, yet he's fired.
Oh.
he's the head coach, but he's not the head coach, I guess, at this point. They fired him, and he's still in the NCAA tournament.
I don't know how that makes sense. Like, how is that okay? Like, is he a part of your program or is he not? Like, you're firing him, but he's going to coach the tournament? What part of the game is that, Ev?
So, I'm curious. Does this give us a lesson in life that when you terminate someone, it has to be immediate? Or does this give you the lesson in life that when you terminate someone, let them fill out whatever it is, like finish out the quarter in sales? Maybe they'll make an extra push as a result.
Why don't you just wait until the actual season is over?
There's that
I
as well.
How about that?
Let's just wait until the season is over. Why do we have to jump the rabbit and say you're fired? But wait, we could still be playing basketball because we could win our conference tournament and punch our ticket to the NCAA tournament.
Why wouldn't you just wait? I can't understand that at all, because then something like this happens.
Yeah.
And even if it didn't, you're having the conversation and then you still have to coach some games.
I wonder if it's a diabolical way of motivating the coach. Like maybe you can motivate the coach and motivate the team. Hey, we're going to say that we're going to fire you unless you win the conference tournament and you make it to the NCAA tournament.
But didn't they announce it?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's how we know
about
it, obviously.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like, you already announced it. So, if I'm the coach that you fired, why would I have more motivation?
Yeah,
you just fired me.
But couldn't you walk it back, though? Like, if he does, say he gets to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, they make the Sweet 16, could you walk it back and say, yeah, we were just kidding, we're not going to fire you?
Okay, I'll give you an either or based on this, because this was the next unsportsmanlike moment, because it works with this. So, Kevin Keats, the coach of NC State,
mm-hmm.
he was on the hot seat. Okay?
Yeah.
They go and they win the ACC tournament. As a result, he gets a 2-year extension, a $400,000 raise, and a $100,000 bonus.
Yeah.
What would be odder, if that's a word, more weird, more odd? If NC State still fires him, or if Long Beach State hires Dan Monson?
If NC State still fires Kevin Keats.
Like, I agree.
If like, they still fire
don't matter. Sorry.
Like, yeah, the 2-year extension, we're going to buy that out. You still out of there anyway,
yeah.
baby.
but thanks for getting us in.
We appreciate it. Yeah, exactly.
So you think there's still a chance at Monson? They just
think there's still a chance.
That would be unbelievable. Then other there's ADs are going to be like, hey, you know what? We need a little bit of a boost. Let's fake fire someone today. We're going to fake fire our head coach. That is a remarkable thing. If they actually I don't think they will do that, but I'm starting to play out like what the conversation probably was. It had to have been him saying to his boss, hey, I've been here 17 years. Just give me the truth. Like, what's happening right now?
Can we fake fire Nuno?
Okay, go ahead.
30. Nuno, you're fired.
Now, usually it's somebody who ranks above the person that fires them.
No, it's fine. He left.
Got it. So Nuno just got fired.
We're fake firing Nuno today. We need him to be better tomorrow, right?
Yeah, tomorrow's going to be the best show ever.
Fire him today.
Got it.
I can't wait to see what we have in store.
Finish out the week strong,
okay.
right?
Okay.
Exactly.
Greeny coming up next. We are on to Tuesday, I guess, without Nuno, who just got fake fired. It's Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.